This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
A.U.S.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We're glad to be with you today, talk with you on each and every day about sports right here on AM 870. We have our good friend in the studio, Jack Ebling, is with us. We'll have Drew Sharp on the line shortly, and we'll talk with Drew about the NFL and about Roger Goodell and what he did and what he said to the Lions yesterday. We'll get Drew's take on that, and we'll talk with Jack about his new book, The Heart of a Spartan, that is now out, and officially you can get it and go get it, and we'll talk with Jack about the book. Very lovely cover, very nicely done, very big book, and Jack, tell me, why did you decide to do another book? I mean, there's been so many books written on the Spartans, so why one more?
Well, there really haven't been. There haven't been many. There have been different kinds of books. There was a historical book that Condemos did and his brother a few years ago, going way back. But there haven't been any books like this or about Michigan State or any other school. And what we did was really present the last two seasons in tremendous detail with the best photography anyone could find, and then set it up with a historical perspective of the previous 160 years, really dealing with Michigan State's rise from a very sleepy, small ag school to a world-class megaversity, and the role that athletics, especially football, played in that, and John Hanna being the key person involved in that. But the fight to get into the Big Ten and Michigan State's role in terms of integration of big-time college football programs, and then, of course, the up-and-down ride. As you know, as we've talked many times, Michigan State's had good teams, but there's a difference between having a good team and having a great program, and right now Michigan State is poised. I think we wondered if Michigan State would ever have back-to-back 11-win seasons.
Yes.
And four straight wins over Michigan, and in a position right now where they can sustain this for a while.
Yes, I mean, Mark D'Antonio has just done an incredible job since he's been here. And, you know, these going into the fifth year here, I mean, it's just I never would have believed that Michigan State would win back-to-back 11-game season. Heck, I was, as you know, I used to be very critical about how much speed they had, which was
right.
Very slow.
Right.
I mean, they couldn't beat molasses. But, you know, they somehow he's got the team together. He recruited good players. He didn't recruit great players, but he got players that had room for growth, and they grew, and everything just worked out well for them. You know, of course, getting A-Rod in at Michigan at the right time, that certainly helped the cause as well. I mean, that hurt Michigan, but that certainly helped Michigan get a growth in the Big Ten. That's really helped them. So they've had a lot of the things just seem to fall right for Spartan, just like we said about Tom Izzo.
Sure.
Things fell right for him as well. So
one of the big differences, as you know, Michigan State's had players drafted. They've had All-Americans.
Yes.
Problem is, it takes a lot of them. It isn't basketball where you can do it with three guys and a bunch of role players. This is a situation where in college football, you can't even do it with 22. You
yeah.
need 50, as Penn State's about to find out. So Michigan State was in a situation where maybe their first 22 could compete.
Yes.
But as attrition hit and injuries, then you saw the problems with the program. And now Mark D'Antonio has built amazing depth. They have nine
yes.
linebackers on the roster this year who would have started for a lot of Georgia's teams.
Yes, I sort of wonder now, will he start losing players? I mean, he's got good players, and once you develop them after a year or two, then I have to wonder, will they stay or will they go? Will he start having some problems with depth? I guess we won't find
that's
out.
That's why you need to keep recruiting. You need to keep developing them. But, you know, you see guys in the past, and Michigan State could sell playing time. They say, hey, you can come in here and play right away. They can't sell
no.
that now the same way, but guys are still coming. They want to be part of a winner. They want to be part of a team that's going to go to a New Year's Day bowl game. They want to be part of a team that's going to be on television at night in front of a full stadium. And I tell you what, have you been in the stadium yet to see these scoreboards?
I haven't seen them yet.
Oh.
Just some from the back.
Well, you're going to hear them, because when they turn them on, you'll hear them over here. Better keep your door closed.
Well, Well, that's going to be great, and it's great to see. When you look at the program and Jack, when you look at what Mark D'Antonio has done, you have to say it's quite impressive what he's done in his years here.
Yeah, and I think you saw that last year, Earl, with every freshman except one redshirting. Had one linebacker who played on special teams primarily. Otherwise, every scholarship freshman redshirted. And that pays dividends down the road. When you're playing with 22-year-olds and another school's playing with 18-year-olds, it shows up.
Yes, it's definitely making a difference, that's for sure. And he has just done a great recruiting job. And of course, that means every year in and year out, you don't have many scholarships available. You only, like I think, right. What, 13 or 14 every year. So, like you say, the depth is great. He's just built such a tremendous program here. He's really done a great job. And, of course, it's funny, you know, how he's helped in develop the program, and Michigan is, you know, they're starting to get back now. So we could really have
But they've always had great recruits. Yeah. Even under Rich Rod, you look at where their recruiting classes were ranked. I didn't perform that way on the field, but I wonder about that. Rich Rodriguez was blamed for Lloyd Carr's players who were there, but now when Brady Hoke comes in, you know, he's still got some of these other players. So I think what you're going to see is Michigan State's ability to evaluate players and develop players being very important. It's not like Michigan State is winning the recruiting battle on signing day. No one is handing them the mythical national championship in February. But that doesn't matter as much as what happens in October and November.
Yep. Well, let's bring in our good friend Drew Sharp and see what Drew has to say. Drew, how you doing? And
hey, Jack is wrong. Oh, wait, I think we started. I'm not sure what he was saying, but Jack is wrong. Okay. How you guys doing today?
Good. Okay. I'm surprised we could pull you off the golf course.
Oh, we had fun a couple days ago, though, didn't we?
That was fun. Hey, Drew's gotten better, Earl.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know, we used to say, well, okay, you know, we're going to play with Drew, and he's going to have some tough holes. I think he had one bad hole. That was it.
It was fun. He played up at Forest Acres there, the West Course, which I had never played before, and that was a brutal course.
I think it's the toughest course in the area. I really do, even though we've got a lot of great ones, and Eagle Eye and so many of the others you know, have a great reputation, and they're fun to play. But in terms of degree of difficulty,
that was quite the challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, what did you learn from Roger Goodell yesterday, Drew?
Well, he's a very political figure. There's no question about that. And I think he understands that. Because I asked him specifically, does it bother him that to hear other players say that they don't trust him, that they think that he has a double standard, that he treats others involved with football differently than he does players. And he said, look, I understand that. I understand that I'm not going to have a lot of friends and a lot of enemies, but he goes that, and he's right on this one, that the Players Association negotiated this into the collective bargaining agreement to give the commissioner the unilateral authority to discipline players if he feels they have violated the personal conduct policy of the NFL. And the Lions have been gross violators of that this offseason. And this was a regularly scheduled visit, guys. A lot of people were saying, well, he's doing this because of what the Lions, the problems the Lions have. No. I mean, that had something to do with it, but he tries to go out and see as many teams as he can every offseason. He's been touring a lot of the teams in the Great Lakes area this week, heading up to the Hall of Fame game this weekend. So this was on the schedule. But he made a point of talking with the players afterwards and making them understand that, you know, that something I've written and many have written for a long time, being an NFL player is not a right. It is a privilege. That privilege can be revoked anytime if the league feels you have embarrassed the reputation that the league is trying to establish. And I think he's got to suspend fairly. He's going to suspend Nick Fairley for a couple games. It might be before he has his day in court in November, but I do think he's going to make the Lions an example. If they screw up during the season, if a Ndamukong Suh kicks a player, or you have episodes like that, instead of getting two games, if it's a Detroit Lion this year, he's going to get three games.
Fairly or unfairly,
he's going to take a hard line.
Yeah,
Yeah, Drew, you know Peter King wrote that article, was in last week's Sports Illustrated, about how it looks like it's going to be a lot of problems between the union and the league now. Do you see that happening? Did anyone ask him about, you know, the league and the union might have a lot more problems? And maybe, I know they have 8 years to wait for the next collective bargaining agreement, but they could have a lot of problems in that next collective bargaining agreement.
Well, no, the thing is, why didn't the Players Association addressed this last year during the lockout? They wanted to get paid. That's what the players. It was a $9 billion a year revenue pie, mm-hmm. and the players were more interested in getting what they felt was their rightful cut of that pie. Mm-hmm. They didn't care so much then about, well, are we making the commissioner too powerful? They wanted their money, and they got their cash. So don't come back now and start complaining. Well, we need to reopen this because we shouldn't have agreed to that. We shouldn't have agreed to give them that much power. Well. That was part of the negotiating process. They wanted more money. And the owner said, okay, if you want that much more cash, what are we going to get? We want to get more control over player conduct.
Drew, I always say that when you have a labor management dispute, management usually has more power, and I tend to sympathize with labor. But in this case, I have no sympathy for the players who signed this agreement, were fully aware of what it was, and as you say, this was a cash grab for them.
Right, exactly. You can't have sympathy for them. Again, of all the pro athletes, I think three of us have talked about this a lot. I don't think any of us begrudge an NFL player trying to get as much as he can as right. quickly as he can, because his career has a much shorter shelf life. And they've been able to do that. They succeeded in doing that. So that's great for them. But, you know, you have to give something back. That's part of negotiation. If that's your number one priority, is to make sure your players are better compensated, then you know what? You're going to have to give something back. And one of the things they gave back was to give the commissioner more authority than what he had in the previous collective bargaining agreement. And that's going to be an issue. And another thing he brought up, guys, is about the concussion matter, because mm-hmm. as it pertains with the Lions, with Jahvid Best. And Goodell was adamant, and I say this clearly, he was adamant that the league is not pulling the strings as far as telling teams not to play a guy. But I asked him specifically, isn't the league worried about all the lawsuits? Isn't this the root of the decision now for the league to take a harder stand? Is it primarily because the league is afraid of litigation? And he said no. He said we're adamant about player safety first and foremost. So I'm saying, he's a politician. He said the absolute right thing, but you can't tell me that the owners are not worried about litigation and the fact that these lawsuits coming out with all these former players, that the NFL, you saw what the hit that Penn State took
right.
from that one, you know, what they're going to take with those civil lawsuits. Can you imagine what might happen with the NFL if some of these thousands of suits are settled and the millions upon millions that the league could be liable to pay?
The other thing with this, Drew, I think that's a very good point, but if you look at the NFL compared to Major League Baseball and the NBA, the NFL has always been more concerned with its image. That shield stands
right.
for something.
Right.
And they don't make short-term decisions. They're looking at the overall growth of the sport, and it's reflected in the fact of what football's become in this country.
Well, absolutely. It's why we love this sport, because of the controlled violence, the controlled aggression, and people might not agree with that, but I think that's a big part of it. We look at these guys as warriors, and the players have adopted that mindset, and this is why they play even when they're hurt. They play when they shouldn't play, because it's considered a sign of weakness, and now we're seeing the effects of that. That these players now that, you know, someone had to step up and make these players realize that no matter how much money you're making short term, the long term physical effects on you are something that just cannot be ignored. If I'm Jahvid Best, I would have to seriously consider retiring right now. Jim Schwartz said yesterday after practice it could be weeks before he's cleared, not days, weeks. And when you're saying that to the reporters, when you're saying that publicly, that's basically a sign that you really can't count on him playing for you at all for this season. Because I think the NFL is nervous. You know, if Jahvid Best if he gets cleared to play and gets hit in the head again, which is very likely, being sure. a running back and the history he has with head injuries, if he sustains a serious injury, then is the league then liable because they cleared him to play?
How often have you seen a starting running back go through even one game without some contact to the head?
Exactly.
Never.
That's the way the sport is. It is a violent sport, and they have to acknowledge that it is a violent sport. And then it asks, well, wait a minute, if it's that violent, then why are we playing this game there? These guys run the risk of, you know, all these suicides we're seeing, these players who don't live to see their 50th birthday. And there's something wrong there.
Okay, Drew, hold on. We got to take a short break. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
7 minutes of terror. That's how NASA describes the planned landing of the Mars Science Laboratory this weekend. I'm Neil Conan. Join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for a look ahead to the Curiosity mission, plus changing views about a changing climate. That's on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Talk of the Nation Science Friday coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for joining us. This is Scott Pohl. Today's high 89, mostly sunny and a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms. A chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low in the upper 60s tonight. Tomorrow's high 91, mostly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. And partly sunny Sunday with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 80.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Chatting with Drew Sharp of the Detroit Free Press and Jack Ebling, who's written a book and a new book out called The Heart of a Spartan, and we'll talk about them and we'll continue our discussion right here on AM 870 WKAR. Now, Drew, what about the players? I mean, you know, we saw how the players have mandated and they've gotten less pay for rookies in their rookie contract, and supposedly that money was supposed to go to the veterans. We haven't seen a lot of that. I mean, they're fighting with every veteran. They're fighting for money these days. Has that money actually going to the veterans at all?
Some has, but it's still not the way that the veterans thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
that still hasn't changed. That, you know, it's good though that they got a rookie salary cap. It that made tremendous sense to put some controls over that. But it made it easier for the owners. It just made it much easier for the owners. And now what you are going to see now, I do think, is that teams now will be more aggressive in locking up their good players after 2 or 3 years and give them some good extensions, good long-term extensions where, you know, the money that they might not have gotten as a rookie if you were drafted in the top five in the first round, you know, if you're good those first 2 or 3 years, you'll get that money back.
Yes. Now, we know that the NFL, no doubt they're the strongest league, and they've had great success in these contract negotiations. I would say that most of the time the owners and they've won the salary contract negotiation plea. And it looks like the players just got it again. You know, they didn't get hosed this time, but they certainly didn't get what they wanted.
What did Calvin Johnson just sign for?
Yeah, he got it. He was one of the few that got a good contract. That's the thing.
Why do you say one of the few?
Yeah, the few.
What did Drew Brees just sign for?
Like I say, he was one of the few.
Yeah. Well, who are the ones who haven't gotten
it? 4 years, 100 million, I think. Yeah. You know?
Yeah,
each team has a salary cap, right? Mm-hmm. That they can play with.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That it's salary how they choose you. To manipulate that money, mm-hmm. and if they choose to give it all to three players, then so be it. That's right, up
that's
to the
Lions.
Team.
Jack, that's about the Lions are in right now because argue all you want that you know I think you overpaid for Calvin Johnson, tremendous right. player, but why? I tell people this: it's going to be easier finding the next Calvin Johnson than it will be the next Darrell Revis. A great cornerback out mm-hmm. there because wide receivers, people are just gravitating to wide receiver at high school and college.
Right.
If you're 6'4", tremendous athlete, they know that's what the NFL has become. But the Lions had to do what they had to do to save them cap room. If they didn't sign Calvin Johnson to an extension this year, he would have been on the cap for the next 2 years, combined $46 million. So they had to get him a deal to make the salary cap a little easier for him. And now you're going to have to deal with Matthew Stafford after this season. If he comes close to matching the 5,000 yards he passed a year ago, mm-hmm. he's going to be looking at Drew Brees' money. That's 4 years, $100 million. Then you got Ndamukong Suh. If he rebounds from his from his average sophomore year, and looks like to be that dominating interior lineman that people thought he was during his rookie season, you're going to have to pay him as well. There's not much left to go around for anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Gee, and that's the thing. Well, let's look at the college game, guys. I know we all follow the college game quite closely. With this season coming up.
Are you playing college football in the Big Ten?
We know that you're the SEC guy.
No, you know, I got to tell you a story, Earl. You'll be surprised by this.
Is the Big Ten any teams left that aren't on probation? Or
they have had a little run of that. But okay. You know why Drew Sharp played better golf the other day?
Why is that?
Because he wore a Big Ten cap, which was given to – Delaney gave you that cap, right?
Delaney gave me the cap. We met with him and some reporters. We had a personal sit down with him back in June in his office in Chicago, and he gave us the free run of the gifts of the Big Ten. So he gave us a sleeve of golf balls, and I can lose these easily, you know. And it was a typical Big Ten golf ball, though. You know, it only went like 8 yards and then it died. But the cap, though, hey, it's pretty cool cap. So, okay, I'll tell you what, Jim, I will wear your Big Ten cap when I'm on the golf course. So
it looked pretty good.
It shows I'm fair-minded.
Yeah. Gee, no acid in it. It wasn't lined.
But, you know, last year, Michigan State went down, beat an SEC team in the bowl
game. Yeah, that's true.
Actually, the Big Ten has done pretty well in bowl games against the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Well, not a game
Ohio
that
State
matters,
had a couple of duds, but otherwise.
Yeah. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting conference. Again, you know, the early rankings came out. Was it the coaches' poll?
Yeah.
Jack and Earl that came out?
Yep.
They had five SEC teams in the top 10. Was it five in the top 10?
I think
something
it was
like that.
About five in the top 10, yeah.
And Michigan being the only one in the Big Ten. And I found it amusing that I was at the Big Ten meetings last week, but the media voted U of M to be the favorite. Even though I think even Brady Hoke would admit, if you got him in a private moment, that, you know, it's going to be a little dicey to build upon what they did a year ago. I mean, they'll be lucky, I think, to win 8 games. With that schedule they have, but I think that a big reason why the media picked the Wolverines is that I think people want to return the Big Ten to some sense of normalcy. You got the Penn State just the debacle there, just beyond belief how bad that situation is there, and Ohio State's on probation for just this year, there's a bowl ban for 1 year, correct? Or is it 2 years?
Well, they had the
bowl ban last year.
But, you know, you got four teams here. You've got Nebraska. Yeah. Michigan's still on probation.
Yeah.
Michigan's still on probation. So, you've got four teams.
But I think that's one reason why. I think people, the media covering the Big Ten would like to see Michigan come back to return some sense of order. I just don't see that happening this year. They're coming back, but right. I just don't see that happening for this season. I think you're looking at, honestly, guys, I think Michigan State is still the best team in that division. You know, I look at that defense, and that is – I'm still remembering the words. I'm on the field there after the Outback Bowl and some of the Georgia players. I was talking to them about Golston, and they said, man, he could play in the SEC. That's a form of flattery.
Yeah.
You know, that's a form of flattery there. And I'm not saying that just to be a smartass like I usually am, but I think they were saying that out of respect. Man, these guys are pretty good. They're pretty fast. They could play at this level. And if Michigan State if they really have that type of defense, that can take them a long way in this conference.
Yeah, I think the defense is going to be terrific. We don't know about Andrew Maxwell yet. He's got to stay healthy, and a lot of things have to fall in place. But I like Michigan State's chances with the four home games they have with Boise State, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Nebraska, compared to the Michigan schedule. You know, you start off with Alabama in Dallas, and then you've got to go to Notre Dame. Notre Dame somehow managed to lose a game last year in Ann Arbor after gaining about 7,000 yards.
No.
And then Michigan has to play at Nebraska. That's a revenge game. And you've got Ohio State waiting. That's their bowl game.
That's their bowl game.
Plus, I really think the team that is dangerous, and I said this to Earl this year, watch Purdue. Purdue has the most starters back. They have 18 guys back. They have three guys who have won games for them at quarterback. They've got potential first and second round picks on the defensive line and at cornerback. They're the only team in the country that's beaten Ohio State two of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And they got a great schedule. Scheduling is so important. They don't play Michigan State. They don't play Nebraska. And they play Michigan and Wisconsin in West Lafayette.
Well, that's That could be the wild card. And again, look at the division right there. I mean, someone has to win the leaders,
right,
correct?
Right, right.
Someone has to win it. So Ohio State isn't eligible. Penn State's not a factor.
Right.
Wisconsin, who knows about Ball's injury?
I mean,
you hope that it's something that it won't have a lingering effect, but with a concussion, you never know.
Right.
Purdue, could you see Purdue playing in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I could. I could see Michigan State and Purdue playing for the Big Ten championship.
It could. Certainly could happen. Both those teams.
Yeah. The other thing about Wisconsin, Wisconsin last year got a gift. Michigan State got one with Brandon Wood coming in basketball, but not like what Wisconsin got with Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
he's probably the best quarterback in school history.
Right. Oh, yeah. That was a tremendous season. And now, can O'Brien, can he do the same thing? I don't think he'll be a very good quarterback, but
right.
I don't think he can kill you in the number of ways that the kid last year could.
Right.
But, it's going to be a very interesting season with this conference. I still think that they're struggling competitively when compared nationally. I mean, look at the Big 12 guys. The Big 12 2 years ago was given up for dead after all those teams had left, and everyone was saying, "Well, you know what? They could have been one of the top conferences in the country." But now, just in the span of 2 years, they got TCU in there, and the Mountaineers are in there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they're one of the 10 teams in there now. They've aligned themselves with the SEC with this Champions Bowl now. They have now become the number two conference. They were given up for dead 2 years ago, and now they have leapfrogged over your Big Ten, Earl, to become the number two conference in the country. It's just crazy how this college football landscape has changed as dramatically as it has.
It has, and it's going to change even more as we know in the next few years. Have you had a chance to look over Jack's book there, Drew?
You know what? He gave me a copy, and I was looking over it last night. You know, I said, "Wait a minute." He said, "I'm in here somewhere. Where is that?"
I tell people they're in it, and I know they'll look through it. That no, he is in it though.
No, I'm looking forward to that though. I mean, it's the heart of a Spartan. I'm telling you, this is. I think right now, aligning yourself with Michigan State sports is probably one of those hot trends right now.
Because, do you see that in the Detroit area, Drew?
Yes. I am seeing more Michigan State stuff all over the Detroit area now, whereas that just was not the case not as far back as 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe it's because of football. Basketball has been successful for 10 years, but it's football that drives the mindset of people in the metropolitan Detroit area. And the fact that Michigan State now, whether you were a Michigan State fan, you're not even aligned with Michigan State before, but the job that Mark D'Antonio has done with that program over the last 5 years, and now, you know, people are expecting them, not hoping, they are expecting them to put together consistent, consecutive 8 and 9 win, perhaps 10 win seasons.
Right.
That tells you that, that has changed the whole perception of Michigan State athletics.
Do you think this team can still win 10 or maybe even 11 games this year in a third year in a row?
They can. Injuries are a big key of this. But number one, if that defense is as good as everyone thinks they are, then this team is not – these games are going to stay close. They have an experienced offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in the last 2 years, they're going to be able to run the ball when they want to. That wasn't the case the last couple of years.
Right.
So I think this is going to be old school George Perlis football, like we saw in '87. That they're not going to take a lot of chances. They're going to make it as comfortable for the young quarterback as they can. He's going to have to make some plays, but it's nothing like what the pressure was on Cousins a year ago, because they couldn't run the ball.
Yep.
They can run, and they can stop the opposing team.
You know, I want to amplify something Drew said about the Detroit area. A tremendous number of Michigan State alumni living in the Detroit area, but it was almost like they were closet fans to some degree. Now there's some of them out there, and they're diehards, but a lot of them were – they didn't want to get beat up every day.
That's
for
true.
Wearing Michigan State stuff. And now, as Kirk Cousins says, hey, we can walk the streets. It's 4 years in a row that they'd beaten Michigan, and so they can hold their head up.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot more of the Block S around here. And I think you're right, Jack, that there are more Michigan State alum around here than U of M alum. They're more U of M fans.
Right. Right.
That's just being a front runner. That's the way it is in sports. But I think you see more and more of the Michigan State people, those fans who went to the school, are you know, they're taking the Michigan State stuff out of cobwebs. They're not ashamed to wave the block yes around.
And that's good for Michigan State. We know that they're getting more visible now. They haven't been able to be visible in the last year. So, no, that's good for Michigan State. Hey, Drew, when you look at Michigan State and what they've done over the last 2 years, do you really see it from your end, Michigan State able to continue what they've done over the last 2 years, or maybe even expound on that, maybe even somehow even get a little bit better? I mean, I know we've both been critical of how they've done. These last 2 years have been exceptional. Do you think they'll fall back to the old Spartans that people always say, you know, the old Spartans are always a comeback?
No. I mean, I've told people this with the Michigan State program, that the floor for the program has changed. Everyone talks about what's the ceiling for Michigan State football. Now, look at the floor.
Right.
A bad season for Michigan State football now is 7 wins.
Right.
Whereas before, a bad season was 3 wins.
Yeah.
That's it. This program isn't going anywhere. I told Coach D'Antonio this. I was talking with him at one of these functions where they look at recruits.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in Southfield like a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, don't you think that the biggest compliment to your program is that these other institutions now, these other programs, are now looking at the guys you're targeting? These guys who were maybe 3 stars, 2 stars that other schools have ignored, but because Michigan State has targeted them, now they're going after these guys. That Michigan State had recruited a kid, an offensive lineman out of Texas,
mm-hmm.
who few people had heard of.
Right.
But when word came out that he had verbally committed to Michigan State, Alabama, Oklahoma, all these other schools wanted to go out after him. So he reopened the recruiting search. That is a sign that Michigan State, and Jack, you said this earlier, they're doing a tremendous job of identifying talent.
Yeah.
And this is the key for them. Wisconsin and Iowa are in the same boat. They can't shop like Ohio State and U of M.
Right.
Just bring in 25 recruits, knowing that 10 of them probably will flame out. You have to make sure you get the right 15 recruits that are going to stay with you, that you can coach them up, and then by the time they become juniors and seniors, they become very good players. They're doing that. They don't have to recruit like these big schools. Just get the right players and keep the right coaching in place there. There's no reason why Michigan State can't consistently win a minimum of 8-9 games a year.
Yeah, as you say, Drew, not every school can be Michigan and Ohio State. They can't put 110,000 people in their stadium and get 8 home games every year if they want them. But a lot of schools can look at what Michigan State has done, look at what Wisconsin has done with 5 Rose Bowl trips in the last 19 seasons and say, you know, why can't we do that? And that's usually good enough.
Right. And I think in regards with the Penn State thing, I don't think this is going to kill Penn State, losing the scholarships like people are saying. What they have to do, they're going to have to recruit like Michigan State and Wisconsin and Iowa does. They're going to be more selective in who they get.
Yeah,
depth is going to be a problem, so it'd be far more selective.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I wanted to bring up Penn State next. They haven't lost that many guys that have left. They've only lost 2 as of now. So they might still be pretty good. Don't you think they might still be pretty good just because they haven't had that many, too much attrition, Drew?
Well, losing Silas Redd is going to hurt.
Right, that's going to
hurt them a lot. But I still think this is a team that can win 7 games this year, and I think over the next 4 years, they could still be a 500 football team.
Yeah,
they could still be a 500 football team. But this idea that because they're on probation now and can't go to a bowl, all of a sudden they're going to be a 2 or 3 win program. I just don't see that happening. They have to change the way they go about recruiting and targeting the guys who they think can help them and can stick, because depth is going to be their number one problem now.
Looking at the players on their roster, if you analyze the schedule, you might say they're a 7-5 team even before this hit. So maybe it costs them a win or something like that, but it's not like they were going from 11 wins to 2 wins because of this.
Right.
And Bill O'Brien, with his NFL background, he's used to working with 53 players. Didn't seem to bother the Patriots. Of course, everyone has the same limitations. But I think if you have a solid 2 deep, and he can be very selective. You see the number 2 passing quarterback in the country, Christian Hackenberg, a kid from New Jersey, said, doesn't matter to me. I'm still going to Penn State. And as O'Brien said, hey, we're going to have seven bowl games a year. We're going to have more than 100,000 people here cheering for you more than ever would at a bowl game. And now Penn State's going to try to work something out with Hawaii to play there. So, you know, I don't see Penn State having the kind of precipitous fall off that some people do.
Right. And the thing is, and I think what helps Penn State in this and that, you got an NFL offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
He can tell these guys, okay, you know what? I can't guarantee you a bowl game, but you know what? I coach Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I can maybe get you to the NFL. And I think that's going to help with recruiting these kids that, okay, I can't go to Pasadena, or in Penn State's case, it won't be Pasadena, I can't go to the Fleabag Bowl in Shreveport or something like that.
Right.
With a 6-6, 7-5. But you know what? With this coaching staff, they might get me to the next level. That's enough to get me interested in playing for Penn State. That's the way they have to go about it.
And when you tell prospects, hey, you know, we'll get you to Florida, they're not thinking about going to Orlando or Tampa. They're thinking about playing for the Dolphins or the Jaguars.
Yeah. Right. And that's the way they have to do it. That's how you keep the guys in your program. That's how you recruit the certain guys, the selective guys you have to get. You sell the NFL. That's what MSU did with Perlis. You know, that was part of their, and Saban to a certain degree as well, that, you know what, you know, with their NFL ties, going there might help them get to that, to the next level. And you do that, you're Penn State, again, you'll be okay. You'll make it out of the next 4 years in fairly decent shape.
That's okay. Why Jarrell Worthy and now Golston, that's going to help.
Yep. Hey, Drew, hold on. We got to take another short break. And John, stay on the line. We'll get to your call. Stay tuned for more sports talk after a short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Niagara Falls and the Grand Canyon are overrun with tourists, so how about a vacation in Chernobyl? I'm Neil Conan. Join Ira Flato on Science Friday for a look at the world's most polluted places as travel destinations, plus One Doctor's vision of the future of healthcare. That's on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Mostly sunny and a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, the high 89. Tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 68. Mostly sunny Saturday, maybe showers and thunderstorms, the high 91. Cooler Sunday, partly sunny and maybe rain and thunderstorms, the high 80. This is Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We got the caller on the line, so Drew and Jack, let's go out to check out John from Holt. John, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how are you today?
Hey, good.
Hello, John.
Hey, what a great event that was last night, the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Bob Every and his staff put on a tremendous evening for everybody. Magic, again, was top-notch. What a classy guy he is. $100,000 he donated to the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. And he stayed probably an hour and 15 minutes signing autographs, schmoozing with the crowd, taking pictures. I mean, that guy is definitely a class act, and he has meant so much to the city of Lansing and the state of Michigan. And, I mean, you cannot say enough kind words about him or Bob Every, in my opinion, guys.
Well, I was very surprised. I think a lot of people were surprised when he made that contribution.
Yes.
Some people on the committee nearly fell over, but that is going to do an awful lot for that Hall of Fame.
It will. It will. It'll help tremendously.
And they have a great race. I participated in the 5K race that they had the previous Sunday. They had over 200 participants. And I encourage anyone out there next year that's a runner or walker, please do that run. That also raises money for the Lansing Sports Hall of Fame, because they don't really get a lot of extra money. Any donations are appreciated, I'm sure. Bob Every's famous in the PR department to call in and say these things.
Hey, well, you know, John, what you and I are going to have to do, we're going to have to get Jack in shape so he can get it, so he can run in the 5K.
You know, I was going to run in that race at Channel 6, the new race called the Human Race.
Hey, I remember Jack ran a race over at Michigan State one time when I was over there with his son, Zach. You remember that, Jack?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack, I think you're the man for the job.
Once Earl plays golf regularly, then we'll talk about running.
We're going to call you Usain Ebling here in a couple of years. So.
Insane Ebling, I've been called. But.
Hey, guys, you have a great weekend. Thanks for taking my call. Like I said, it's amazing how many great athletes have come from Lansing. I know a lot of people that aren't from here don't know how many great athletes there are, but just reading that roster of all the inductees over the years very much surprised me. I guess I didn't realize myself, being 42, how many people – they came before me. We're from Lansing. We're professional athletes, Olympians.
Yeah.
Like that Albertson guy or whatever. Alderman, I mean.
From the 28 Olympics, yeah.
I never knew about that guy. I mean, he was 1929 Olympian, world record holder.
Yeah.
Guys like that that are pretty obscure to anybody outside of Lansing are the guys that are amazing that no one even knows about outside of Lansing. I would have no idea that guys like him or – some of these other guys are from the Lansing area. I mean, what a tremendous area for local talent. We've got all kinds of people that have been in the pro sports, Olympic sports. You know, they're inducted in other Hall of Fames throughout the country. I mean, it's just amazing what kind of talent there is in the mid-Michigan area.
Yeah, there is. Hey, thanks a lot, John. Yes, Jack, that was a tremendous event that you and I were at last night, the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame banquet. All the tremendous, inductees with Mohsin Muhammad was inducted, you know, and of course, the 77 Magic team.
So, how about the 72 Holt team?
Yes.
Undefeated, untied, and unscored upon.
Yes, that hardly ever happens, as we know, in sports. And he had to go undefeated, untied, and no one score against him. That had to be special as well.
That was reminiscent of the LSU-Alabama game last year.
I would encourage everyone in mid-Michigan to stop at the Lansing Center and look at that display, Earl. We saw it last night, but they've done a tremendous job in getting memorabilia and artifacts over there. If you want to learn a little bit about this area and its history, that's a pretty good place to spend an hour. Even if you go to a Lugnuts game, you know, walk down the street a block and go and check out that display.
Yes, a lot of people will really enjoy it. And Drew, we'll encourage you to come up there and join us and check out the Hall of Fame one day and just walk through.
Earl just wants you to see his plaque and not the kind on his teeth.
So Earl's got a plaque up there? He's got a plaque there.
Yeah, Jack's got one too.
Yeah. Well, obviously this Hall of Fame has no standards.
Oh, well, guys, we got to talk a little bit more football with the season to ride around. Now, I'm almost afraid to ask, but what do you expect from the Lions this year, Drew?
Oh, me. Oh, my goodness. Well, I've said this before.
You're not going to sing your song?
Oh, the Lions suck. The Lions suck. That's the Big Ten song. That's the Big Ten song. Okay. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year. I think the NFC is far and away the deepest of the two conferences. I just don't think they're going to get as much good fortune injury-wise as they had a year ago. And not just for themselves, but look at the Bears a year ago.
Right.
I mean, they lost Cutler and Forte right when they were getting to the easier part of their schedule. You know, again, injuries are part of the game. It happens. But I think they're the third best team in the NFC North right now. It's not an indictment against them. They're getting better. And I was talking to one of the scouts there yesterday, and he was saying to me that, you know, that talent-wise, they're getting better. They're slowly making that, you know, making that that trek upward. But it's going to take so much more time that people, and he goes, people don't realize this, is that other teams aren't necessarily falling back because the Lions are getting better. These other teams have been good for the last 10 years, have constantly drafted well, have constantly nurtured and developed these players to the point where they can let some free agents go because they know they have good replacements there to take their spot. It's going to take Lions still 2-3 more years of sound drafting, sound free agent acquisitions to get to that level. I mean, they are a decent team, but, you know, they had some breaks last year as well, which they weren't used to getting. They probably won't get those breaks this year. So I think that, you know, they could still be a 9-7 team coming this season, but I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
Are they better than the Bears?
I think the Bears are number two. I think the Bears are the number two team. And Cutler, Forte, and Marshall now as a wide receiver, they now have that. And the offensive line is much more improved than it was a year ago. I just think they are a more solid team than the Lions are. The Lions have to beat you 42-38. They can't stop anyone. You still have to be able to win games 24-20. Something like that. I think the Bears are more capable of winning that type of game than the Lions are.
Yeah, that defensive backfield is seems to be pretty weak. I've talked with Larry Leige and Dave Perkett about it, and both are concerned about that defensive backfield. How much are you concerned about the defensive backfield and the fact they don't have very strong cornerbacks coming back?
Jack?
Or you?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, the secondary is a problem. Aaron Berry was supposed to be their starter.
Yes.
And then he had the two episodes with the police and Harrisburg, and now he's off the team. So now they're scrambling to find help in the secondary. It starts with Ndamukong Suh. Ndamukong Suh had a bad sophomore season. I think he got a little full of himself after his rookie season, where everyone was saying, oh, he's the second coming of Warren Sapp. You know, he's going to be one of the great defensive tackles ever. And opposing teams adjusted their blocking schematics with him, and he didn't adjust accordingly. He got frustrated, and you saw what happened. He was blaming the media. He's blaming everyone but himself. He seems to have matured some in this offseason. He's saying all the right things, that, look, he has to be a great player. That's the expectation that he has for himself, and that's the expectation that people in Detroit have for him as well. So we'll see. If he comes back to anything close he was as a rookie, then you'll see the defensive line improve and put more pressure on the quarterback. If not, then the back seven is just going to be exploited, something fierce. What the New Orleans Saints did to the Lions in that playoff game, they scored on 8 consecutive drives. They didn't let up the gas at all against this team. And that should be a warning sign to every Detroit Lion and every Detroit Lions fan. Teams are taking them more seriously now because of that offense. And they know you have to stay on the gas with these guys. Stay up, keep your foot on the pedal and keep scoring against these guys, because they can't, you know, at some point, you know, they're going to have to stop people, and they can't do it.
I think there's a tendency to brand somebody after year one or year two and say, oh, he's good, he's no good, he's great, he's a flop. And you see players improve. You saw it with Matthew Stafford as he stays healthy. I wonder if we're going to see that with Ndamukong Suh, with some of the young players they've added to the defense. Maybe this defense can improve 10% over last year.
Yeah, maybe he can. And that would be significant for this team if they can improve 10%. I mean,
yeah,
look at their last two games. Matt Flynn, the backup quarterback, Green Bay, got that contract from the Seattle Seahawks solely because of that last game against the Detroit Lions, when he became the single game passing record holder for the Green Bay Packers. You know, the single game record holder was Matt Flynn because of the Lions' defense that day. So, I mean, they know the Lions have to realize teams are not they're not expecting them to just implode like they have in the past. I mean, that's one reason why I think they came back in 4 of those late games last year. Teams, okay, they're back to being the same old Lions. Well, they're not the same old Lions. I mean, they're not as talented as other teams, but they're, you know, they're not going to just constantly shoot themselves in the foot like they have in the past. You have to respect that offense, and that's why opposing teams are just going to be relentless against them.
Okay. Well, Drew, we're going to let you go because I know you got to get going, but I just want to let you know that Jack and I will see you about a month from now, and you'll start be on hand for your another defeat.
4 weeks from today.
4 weeks from today, now, you'll be getting brutalized again.
Let's clarify this. Now, I know I haven't won the last couple years. I think Earl won only because you were recuperating. You were ill, then. We were just being sporting.
I think I've won 4 of the last 5, and you won the other one or something like that.
I think something like that. I may have looked up and won one in there. But Earl, I mean, again, I mean, collectively, your record over the last 5 years, Earl, it's Detroit Lion-like in a lot of respects.
Do we have to give him a head start? Do we have to spot him any wins or anything this year? Any kind of handicap system?
But I tell you, we'll give him Boise State in the first game.
Okay, that'll work.
He can take Boise. You know what? He can take U of M in the first game.
Yeah, okay, guys. Well, we'll see what happens. In 4 weeks from now, you guys will be meeting your demise.
Oh, all right, guys. Okay. I'll see you at the media day Monday.
Okay, dokie. All right. We'll see you later, Drew. Yep, bye-bye. The time is 6 minutes left in the hour of 2 o'clock, and Jack wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the book, The Heart of a Spartan.
Right.
And just looking at John Hanna, I know people don't realize You know, we know John Hanna was important to Michigan State, but I don't think people realize how much of an impact he had on getting the Spartans in the Big Ten and the impact he had in building Michigan State's program. I mean, he really built Michigan State into the powerhouse university that it's become.
And he was a student at the University of Michigan when he was recruited away to come and transfer to Michigan State. And, of course, the rest is history. Without him, Michigan State might be a MAC school today. Who knows? But certainly a lot of what Michigan State was able to achieve, and not just in athletics, we're talking about in becoming one of the giants in international education, was due to John Hanna. Of course, he was responsible for the development with Biggie Munn and then Duffy Doherty and those dominant decades of the 50s and 60s when Michigan State was the number one team in the state of Michigan. Yeah. And a lot of people today can't imagine that. They can't believe that there was a period of time where, you know, Michigan would give anything to beat Michigan State. But I think we're seeing that again now.
Yes, and also, you know, we have to look at the integration aspect. John Hanna played such a key role in that, and Michigan State has played such a key role in integrating college athletics.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you saw that with the players who came up from the South, from South Carolina, from Texas, Louisiana. You saw it with the players who came in from Hawaii. Michigan State really had some ethnic and diversity before a lot of other schools. Michigan State and Minnesota, probably more than any other northern schools, opened the doors for black athletes in the South.
And yes, and quarterbacks like with Sandy Stevens came to Minnesota.
Right.
They gave a lot of black athletes a chance to start at quarterback, which is was the primo course, still is a prime position to play. But they certainly opened up the doors. They gave a lot of athletes chances to not only get an education, but to become really good on the football field.
We tell that story in Heart of a Spartan. Gene Washington and Clint Jones, they talk about the brotherhood, the cohesion, the relationships built on that team, and what it really meant in terms of changing the social fabric. They said the success that Michigan State had and the success that Southern California had with Sam Bam Cunningham when he scored the four touchdowns against Alabama did more for integration of collegiate athletics than anything else.
Yes, and when Bubba Smith was here in that final year, he was telling me, and when I was talking to him about if they had played during their sophomore year, they didn't get to play that sophomore year, but all those guys had to play that the sophomore year. Think of that. Instead of having a two-year run, they probably would have had at least a three-year run.
Yeah, it's amazing the record that they had. You know, you lose one game each year. That's pretty special stuff. But that group, I think, will always be regarded as one of the best defenses in college football history. Anytime you go through a season, Earl, and you hold Michigan, Notre Dame, and Ohio State to a combined minus 85 yards rushing, that's not 85, that's minus 85 for those three teams. That's special stuff.
Yes, that certainly shows one aspect, how the game has changed so much. Yeah. You know, I've often talked about that Michigan State-Ohio State game where Michigan State won. And, you know, I talked with Denny Stoltz about, you know, I said, were you surprised that Ohio State was in a gap eight on the 12-yard line, you know, and you were able to run the ball? I mean, today we would never see anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny to talk about that play. You're talking about slice right with Levi Jackson going 88 yards. I've talked to four players on that team who all say they made the key block. So
we know a couple of them.
We know a couple of them, yeah. But I just wanted to let fans know that if they're interested in the book, if they really want to understand what happened the last 2 years and the Michigan State history that set that up, they can pick up a copy of Heart of a Spartan. It should be in stores next week. Also, we're going to have a big launch party next Thursday at Reno's East from 6 to 8. We'd like to invite a lot of our friends, a lot of your listeners, Earl, over there at Reno's East. And you can go online and check it out. You can go to Heart of a Spartan Book, heartofaspartanbook.com, and the Twitter handle is Spartan Heart.
Okay, so do that. Give Jack Ebling's book a look. I think you'll really love it. The last 2 years, as you know, has been very special. Great look at Michigan State history. So give Jack Ebling's book a look, A Heart of the Spartan. I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you all for calling and checking in and listening to us today. We invite you to come back and join us again on Monday right here on AM 870. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up and talk sports right here on AM 870. We want you to make sure you have yourself a safe and a pleasant evening and come back and join us on Monday right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have a very safe and pleasant evening, and we'll see you on Monday right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.